Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on scientific frauds when we come back. You know, during World War II, our parents and grandparents planted victory gardens that helped to provide for their own food and fiber for themselves and for their country. Well, today, over half the food that we eat is imported from outside of our borders. Our food is produced from hybrid seed that will not reproduce and is nutritionally deficient. Now, Adolf Steinbaum of Fairbanks, Iowa, put the matter into perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients that are usually added to commercial feeds. And when compared to more than 4,000 samples of this hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states in a recent year, Steinbaum's open-pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, 205% more manganese, and the same result has also been seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. Now, in the opinion of many ecologic farmers, hybrid seed merely masks poor farming practices by producing bins and bushels of foodless food without the nutrients that are really food's reason for being in the first place. Now, if you'd like to know more about this multinational corporate monopoly of our seed and our food supplies and how you can become independent from them, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first? You know that's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and free of charge. And you can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. All right, we're reviewing a book here called Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, dealing with a subject matter of science that I've entitled Scientific Frauds. Chapter 5 deals with, is evolution a religion? What is religion? And do the adherents of evolutionary philosophy qualify to be a religion? Could they get a 501c3 charter for their religious faith? Well, in almost every creation-evolution debate, the scientist says that scientific creationism, because it is religion and not science, must never be taught in public school, schools that have been taken over by the teachers' unions. However, it is also true of evolution, since it's simply a humanistic, materialistic religion that seeks to explain man's origins. It's not a very good religion, doesn't have any holidays except April 1st. And although most evolutionists get rather pious on the anniversary of the founding of the ACLU. Now, renowned astronomer Robert Jastrow concluded that one must start with faith, whether as an evolutionist or a creationist. Jastrow wrote, quote, "Perhaps the appearance of life on Earth is a miracle. Scientists are reluctant to accept that view, but their choices are limited. Either life was created on the Earth by the will of a being outside the grasp of scientific understanding, or it evolved on our planet spontaneously through chemical reactions occurring in non-living matter lying on the surface of the planet." Now, the first theory places the question of the origin of life beyond the reach of scientific inquiry. It is a statement of faith in the power of a supreme being not subject to the laws of science. Now, the second theory is also an act of faith. The act of faith consists in assuming that the scientific view of the origin of life is correct without having concrete evidence to support that belief, unquote. So, we must start with an assumption, and that requires faith. However, that does not weaken one's position. It's what he does with the assumption that weakens or strengthens his position. No human knows everything, so we must make assumptions. Evolutionists are dishonest when they deny their faith. They do not begin with facts, but evolution begins with faith and usually ends up with a farce and then often a fraud. Now, neither evolution nor creation has been observed, and neither can be observed in the laboratory. So there must be a working assumption or a working hypothesis, which brings us up then to a mythical religion. Evolution is not science, but science fiction. It is scientism, a mythical religion. The inscription on the National Academy of Sciences building reveals that fact. It says, quote, "To science, pilot of industry, conqueror of disease, multiplier of the harvest, explorer of the universe, revealer of nature's laws, eternal guide to truth, unquote. Now, many fundamentalists don't talk about God with that kind of reverence. Listen to this again. Science. To science, pilot of industry, conqueror of disease, multiplier of harvest, explorer of the universe, revealer of nature's laws, and eternal guide to truth. Religious people don't even say that of God. No, that's religion. That's faith. Now, renowned historian of science and philosopher Marjorie Green wrote this. She said, quote, "It is a religion of science that Darwinism chiefly held and holds men's minds. The modified but still characteristically Darwinian theory has itself become an orthodoxy, preached by its adherents with religious fervor, and doubted, they feel, only by a few muddlers, imperfect in scientific faith," unquote. Now remember, I'm citing this directly from the evolutionists' own mouths. I don't want you to write me a letter and say, "You religious kook, you have your own personal opinions here and we don't share them." Hey, I'm not giving you my personal opinion. I couldn't have been that eloquent. That was Marjorie Green that said that, not me. Now note that Green admits that evolution holds men's minds. I'm going to underline that. Evolution holds men's minds, just like religion does. You know, people that are religion, their minds are held. I mean, these people are controlled. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, religious people are dangerous people. You can see that over in the Middle East. You got these religious guys over there tying bombs onto their backs and walking into crowded marketplaces and blowing themselves up to kill themselves and other people. They're murderers. They're religious. They mean well. And no doubt they're trying to save the people they kill and get them to go to heaven with them, I guess. That's what the Catholics did in the Middle Ages, trying to save all those Protestants by burning them alive in building. Now, this holding men's minds has become an orthodoxy. And that orthodoxy is being preached by the adherents with religious fervor. Would that more Christians have the dedication and enthusiasm that this evolutionist has? Some evolutionists have almost made Darwin God, as admitted by evolutionist Colin Patterson. There, underline his name, Colin Patterson. He's the senior paleontologist at the British Museum of Natural History. Here's what he said, quote, "Just as pre-Darwinianism biology was carried out by people whose faith was in the Creator and his plan, post-Darwinian biology is being carried out by people whose faith is in almost the deity of Darwin," unquote. That's Colin Patterson. "I surely would not want to base my eternity or eternal destiny on the speculations, guesses, and wild theories of Charles Darwin." Well-known scientist Harry Bert Nielsen of Lund University emphasized the religion of evolution when he wrote, quote, "My attempts to demonstrate evolution by an experiment carried on for more than 40 years have completely failed. It is not even possible to make a caricature of an evolution out of paleobiological facts. The idea of an evolution rests on pure belief," unquote. Now that is religion. If you want to impress people, and especially if your argument is anemic, you could start with, quote, "Science has proved," or, quote, "Scientists believe." These statements are used to help support an unsupportable argument. They're used to preempt a rebuttal. And you can get away with almost any statement when you're dealing with the unsophisticated, unenlightened, and the uneducated. Okay, so remember this. Science has proved, or scientists believe. Let me ask you this. Let's suppose that a religious guy came along, you know, say Billy Graham, and he said, "Religious people believe." Well, you'd say he was a religious nut, wouldn't you? Religious people believe. Scientists believe. Or what if we said, "The Bible has proved"? Well, these guys say, "Well, science has proved." Now remember, I showed you from the dictionary here, science is knowledge. Well, knowledge, you know, it could be true or it could be false. I mean, people have knowledge, don't they? They have political knowledge, and they voted for Barack Obama. But I notice now his ratings are falling. People have knowledge about voting in Congress and members of Congress, and Congress's approval rating is now down to 11%. It's a historical low. Historic low. But these people have knowledge of Congress. Does that make Congress true? Does it make it a religion? Does it make it true, accurate, and correct? You know, you can have true knowledge or you can have false knowledge. I'm going to give you a little illustration here as to what science is when we deal with knowledge or we deal with time. We must not forget that there are errors in scientific thought. The opinions of scientists change so rapidly that it is reported that the Library of the Louvre in Paris contains 3.5 miles of bookshelves, holding volumes of science that have become obsolete in just 50 years. Can any of you point to a science book that's 50 years old? Can you name one? Is it still being used in your college or high school? 50-year-old science textbook. Now, the Bible is still being used after, 3,300 years. After 3,000 years, it hasn't changed. Well, except in modern times, we've dropped 64,000 words out of the Bible and a few verses and a few chapters in the new modern versions. But if you take a look at the original, or you take a look at the King James, it's still the same. It's been there telling us the same story for thousands of years. But take a look at science books. Now, the reader may recall the famous list of 51 scientific facts published by the French Academy of Science in 1861, all of which contradicted some statement in the Bible. Those few score years have gone by, and not one word of the Bible has been changed. And in those same few score years, the knowledge of science has so vastly increased that there is not a living man of science today who holds one of those 51 so-called facts that were at one time advanced in refutation of the inspiration of Scripture. Do you know that? That was in 1861, and the French Academy of Sciences came out, took up 51 positions against the Bible. And today, there isn't a scientist anywhere who would adopt or would hold to any one of those 51. And we're only talking about 140 or 50 years, aren't we? All right, so now let's take a look at reality here for what it is. Science is knowledge, but some of that science is false knowledge, and those 51 positions taken in 1861 were very knowledgeable at the time, but they were false knowledge. So one of the hallmarks of science is that while science is knowledge, some of the science that we call knowledge is false. And after about 10 years, the science textbook is no longer usable. Science textbooks have a lifespan of about 10 years. Then we have to replace them because they're full of errors. Now, if you want to hold to that, that's fine. But, you know, I just wanted to point out to you that it doesn't make it true just because you believe it. It isn't true just because I say it. So that's why here on the Law Hour, we try to make it a point to come up with the documentation. So now in this book that we're citing from here, called Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, written by Don Boyes, there's a little number here at the end of each one of these paragraphs. And so this story here by Colin Patterson, senior paleontologist at the British Museum of Natural History, you know, his statement, just as pre-Darwinism biology was carried out by people whose faith was in the Creator, and his planned post-Darwinian biology is being carried out by people whose faith is in almost the deity of Darwin, footnote number 4. Now, that's what this guy said, and he's an evolutionist. So like I did last week, I'm simply saying, well, I didn't write this. I'm just telling you this is what these people say themselves. This is out of their books, out of their mouths. We wouldn't have known this if these guys hadn't told us. We would have believed it. We would have suspected it, but we wouldn't have known that. So if you want to impress people, and especially if your argument is anemic, you start with science has proved or scientists believe. Those are the two statements that we use to start the conversation. And it shuts everybody up because... Sounds like Judy Hartson, you know, gasping for air as she's going on her way to Mr. Witt to report little Georgie Gordon and his errant ways on the playground. We must learn to ask, but is it true? How do you know it's true? What is your evidence? Are you implying that all scientists agree with the position? Is it a fact, or is it your interpretation of a fact? You know, there's a big difference. B. Laith admitted, quote, it is therefore of immediate concern to both biologists and laymen that Darwinism is under attack. The theory of life that undermined 19th century religion has virtually become a religion itself, and in its turn is being threatened by fresh ideas. You see, at the Scopes Monkey trial, the orthodoxy of the creationist and his Bible position in the public schools was unassailed until the Scopes Monkey trial. And Clarence Darrow came in and said, we believe that evolution should come into the school and be treated on at least an equal footing with creation. And the legislature and the creationists said, no way, Jose. Now, evolution has displaced creationism in the school. So now the creationists are coming to the door and saying, we think that creation, or in some cases a special intelligence, should be taken and taught on at least an equal basis with evolution. And the evolutionists are now saying, no way, Jose. So you've replaced one religious ideology with another religious ideology. Creationism has been replaced by evolution. Now, the better argument is creation. An even better argument is biblical creation. Not the theistic evolution, not the theistic creation evolution that we talked about in the last program, but rather, why don't we just look at it as pure science? And then we wouldn't be in an argument, would we? Now, evolutionist Julian Huxley admitted that his belief was the religion of evolutionary humanism. And so he actually hung a label on his. This is Julian Huxley. He's an evolutionist. And he called it evolutionary humanism. Humanism, by the way, is the official state religion of the United States. So says our Supreme Court. It's called secular humanism. Well, at least Huxley was honest, unlike most evolutionists. Okay, footnote number 7. Here's another. Did Julian Huxley actually say that? did he actually call it evolutionary humanism? Okay, well, that's chapter 5. Let me just flip over here and see if that's really true. Looking over here at chapter 5, number 7, J. Huxley, Religion Without Revelation, 1957, page 181. It was written by Huxley himself. So it isn't even written by somebody who said Huxley said. This is what Huxley said. He called his religion evolutionary humanism. Harold Urey, Nobel Prize laureate, said the same thing. He said, quote, all of us who study the origin of life find that the more we look into it, the more we feel it is too complex to have evolved anywhere. We all believe as an article of faith that life evolved from dead matter on this planet. It's just that its complexity is so great, it is hard for us to imagine that it did, unquote. That gives us number 8. Who and where was that said? Harold Urey? Here's chapter 5, number 8. Christian Science Monitor. He was cited by the Christian Science Monitor on January 4th, 1962. Okay, there you are. Harold Urey. Then biochemist G.A. Kirkut agreed, quote, it is therefore a matter of faith on the part of the biologist that biogenesis did occur, and he can choose whatever method of biogenesis happens to suit him personally. The evidence for what did happen is not available, unquote. So he admits that what he believes about the beginning of life is a matter of faith, and it sounds like religion to me. That's religion. And then when you talk about you can choose whatever method of biogenesis happens to suit you personally, that's like a religious guy, and I say to you, you can choose whatever church you want to go and worship at to formulate your own salvation. You know, you can go to the Methodist church or the Baptist church or this church or something else. You know, make your choice. And he's simply saying the same thing, that in the form of evolution, hey, you can pick out whatever form of biogenesis you want. You can get it from this guy, that guy, or the other guy over there. Whatever faith turns you on, go ahead and follow that. But it is an article of faith. The renegade Jesuit scientist priest D. Chardin's statement is a religious pronouncement. Quote, is evolution a theory, a system, or a hypothesis? It is much more. It is a general postulate to which all theories, all hypotheses, all systems must henceforth bow, and which they must satisfy in order to be thinkable and true. Evolution is a light which illuminates all facts, a trajectory which all lines of thought must follow. This is what evolution is. Now, that's one of the most religious statements that I've ever read. All theories, all hypotheses, and all systems must bow before evolution. And evolution is light, but it is not light, but darkness. Only God is light. His statement is a revelation of pure paganism. Now, let's take a look at a new religion. You know, Julian Huxley, avid evolutionist, announced the religion of evolution in Chicago when he said, quote, in the evolutionary pattern of thought, there is no longer either need or room for the supernatural. The earth was not created, it evolved. So did all of the animals and plants that inhabit it, including our human selves, mind and soul, as well as brain and body. So did religion. How's that? Finally, the evolutionary vision is enabling us to discern, however incompletely, the lineaments of the new religion, and we can be sure will arise to serve the needs of the coming era. He said the R word, didn't he? The new religion? This is Julian Huxley now. Finally, the evolutionary vision is enabling us to discern, however incompletely, the lineaments of the new religion. All we're doing here, boys and girls, according to Julian Huxley now, is we're going to change Christianity to evolutionary philosophy. This is the new religion. Now, I'm not here to defend Christianity or Catholicism or Protestantism or anybody else. I'm just here as a reporter, and I'm analyzing evolution versus creation, and I wanted to take a look at it from the point of view of scientific fraud. When evolution comes to us and tells us that they're dealing in science, they're liars. Pure and simple. Now, they can use tinkering or fraud, but, you know, what we're dealing with here is deception and lies. And this is a religion. And that's what they're selling. So if you didn't want religion in your public schools, well, you got it now. It's not the conventional religion that we're used to, Christianity. Christianity has been dethroned and thrown out of the public schools, and in its place, we now have the new religion called evolution. Huxley co-authored a book with British evolutionist Jacob Bronowski, where they wrote, quote, a religion is essentially an attitude to the world as a whole. Thus, evolution, for example, may prove as powerful a principle to coordinate man's beliefs and hopes as God was in the past. If that isn't a religious statement, you tell me what it is. Listen to this again. Julian Huxley said, with his co-author Jacob Bronowski, here's their statement. A religion is essentially an attitude to the world as a whole. Thus, evolution, for example, may prove as powerful a principle to coordinate man's beliefs and hopes as God was in the past. Christianity in the past failed. Evolution is going to succeed where it failed. Let me look that up and see where they said that. I'll bet you that's one of Huxley's own books, chapter 5, footnote number 12. Chapter 5, footnote 12. Jay Huxley and Jay Bronowski, Growth of Ideas, page 99, published in 1986. Evolutionists teach that religion evolved along with everything else as a result of man's fear of nature, the future, and death. So man created God rather than God creating man. And Huxley and Bronowski suggest that religion of evolution may be successful in codifying man's belief and hopes as religion did in man's early history. Now, why do intelligent people still accept evolution when it has no facts to support it, as will be discussed in following chapters? Well, it's because it has become their religion. The foundation is not based upon facts. The religion of evolution is based upon faith. Well, that sounds like a Sunday morning in your local Christian church, isn't it? Where the preacher is talking about faith. Hey, we're about the halfway point here. Let me give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour and editorial review that were sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org, the archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Reviewing the book called Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, Don Boyce, Ph.D. We're on Chapter 5, Is Evolution a Religion? Now, the statements made by the evolutionists, some of the prime evolutionists. Let's see, who are some of these guys? Julian Huxley, and then a guy named Bronowski, the British evolutionist Jacob Bronowski, and biochemist G.A. Kirkut, B. Leith, Colin Patterson, Heribert Nielsen, and this lady named Green, renowned historian of science and philosopher Marjorie Green. I mean, you know, we got a bunch of them in here. And Robert Jastrow, and some of these guys I don't know and haven't heard of, but these are the big guns of evolutionary philosophy, and they're all telling us, you know, this is a faith, it's a religion, it's going to replace Christianity. And it has. They've already succeeded. It isn't something that they're planning to do. It's going to happen over the next 50 or 100 years or something like that. It's already been done, past tense. It's already accomplished. British paleontologist Colin Peterson, an evolutionist for 20 years, admitted that he, like most scientists, had assumed that an evolutionary view of nature had replaced an irrational one called creation. But in 1980, that changed for Patterson. Patterson admitted, quote, "Then I woke up and I realized that all of my life I had been duped into taking evolution as revealed truth in some way," unquote. He said that he had experienced, quote, "a shift from evolution as knowledge to evolution as faith," unquote. The following statement is one of the most religious ones you're ever going to read, and it was made by Dr. George Wald, winner of the Nobel Prize in Science. He said, quote, "When it comes to the origin of life on this earth, there are only two possibilities, creation or spontaneous generation, also called evolution. There is no third way. Spontaneous generation was disproved 100 years ago, but that leads us only to one other conclusion, and that is supernatural creation. We cannot accept that on philosophical grounds." I'm going to underline that. We cannot accept that on philosophical grounds, not scientific grounds. See, he's not relying upon science. He's relying upon philosophy. Well, that's personal reasons. That's his personal opinion. Therefore, we choose to believe the impossible, that life arose spontaneously by chance. Did you get that? That's unquote. I got to read that one to you again. That's a mind blower there. Let's see, chapter 5 is the chapter we're on here, and we're looking at footnote number 14, which is cited in Moody's Monthly, T. Woodward, page 20, September 1988. That's why this book is so good. It's because it's well footnoted and has the sources in here. I'd have never known this before. This is a Nobel Prize winner. This guy's name is George Wald, winner of the Nobel Prize in Science. He said, when it comes to the origin of life on this earth, there are only two possibilities. That's creation or spontaneous generation. There's no third way. Spontaneous generation was disproved 100 years ago. Got that? Let's see, when did he say that? 1988. He said by 1888, spontaneous generation or evolution had already been disproved. Nobel Prize winning scientist said that. But that leads us only to one other conclusion, and that of supernatural creation. We cannot accept that on personal grounds, philosophical grounds, or reasons. Therefore, we choose to believe the impossible. We choose to believe something that's impossible and that was disproved in 1888. Therefore, we choose to believe the impossible that life arose spontaneously by chance. Now that, my friends, is religion. Hell, you Christians out there don't have faith like that. Christians. I've never met a Christian who had that kind of faith. Wald admits that evolution is impossible, but he believes it anyway. And at least those of us who believe in miracles believe that an omnipotent God performs those miracles by suspending natural laws. Now, evidently, Wald and other scientists would rather appear to be religious fools than religious fanatics. I'd rather be a fanatic. Evolutionist G.G. Simpson, and underline that name right there, G.G. Simpson put his religion in proper perspective when he said, "It is inherent in any acceptable definition of science that statements that cannot be checked by observation are not really about anything, or at the very least, they are not science," unquote. Well, if the teachings are not science, as admitted by various evolutionists, then what are they? This is religion, pure and simple. Now, let's take a look at science again. Science, by its very definition, is knowledge. Knowledge is something that you can demonstrate and document. You can reproduce it in the laboratory. If I can do it here in my laboratory, I can tell you how I did that, and you can do it yourself in your own laboratory, in your own state, your own country, your own county, or wherever you live. Now, these guys are pretty well-known people. You know, they write books. They get published. They get quoted in national and international newspaper. They're college professors. You know, they work on government projects and spend taxpayer money and receive taxpayer money. These guys are all telling you that this is a religion. Now, this is what you're supporting in your public schools. Now, you can't have creation. You can't have God. You can't have the Bible. That's religion in your public schools. But you can have evolution, and every one of these guys is telling you this is a faith. This is a religion. We can't prove it. We can't document it. But we all believe it, even though it's impossible. And so evolutionist G.G. Simpson put his religion in proper perspective when he said, "It is inherent in any acceptable definition of science that statements that cannot be checked by observation are not really about anything, or at the very least, they are not science." They are not science. Now, what's the first thing that these guys say? They say, well, science proves, and scientists believe. Well, just because scientists believe it doesn't mean that it's checked, proved, demonstrated, or scientific. It just means that this is our faith and this is what we believe. That's religion. Famous British biologist and evolutionist L.H. Matthews, let me underline L.H. Matthews here, wrote the introduction to the 1971 edition of Darwin's Origin of Species. And he wrote of his faith when he said, "Most biologists accept yet evolution as though it were a proven fact. Although this conviction rests upon circumstantial evidence, it forms a satisfactory faith on which to base our interpretation of nature." Well, at least he was honest in calling evolution a satisfactory faith, and that statement is found in the introduction to Darwin's book in 1971. Footnote number 16, by the way. Matthews also admitted, quote, "The fact of evolution is the backbone of biology, and biology is thus in the peculiar position of being a science founded on an unproved theory. Is it then a science or faith? Belief in the theory of evolution is thus exactly parallel to belief in special creation. Both are concepts which believers know to be true, but neither up to the present has been capable of proof," unquote. Other than this fact of evolution being the backbone of biology, the statement is generally true. However, Christians accept the Bible as complete proof and scientific evidence as supporting proof. We can do without the science, but not without the Bible. Physicist Dr. Wolfgang Smith, I'll underline that, Dr. Wolfgang Smith, agrees that evolution is religion. He wrote, "The point, however, is that the doctrine of evolution has swept the world, not on the strength of its scientific merits, but precisely in its capacity as a Gnostic myth. It affirms, in effect, that living things created themselves, which is in essence a metaphysical claim. Thus, in the final analysis, evolution is in truth a metaphysical doctrine decked out in scientific garb." Dr. Smith characterizes evolutionists as priests rather than objective seekers of scientific truth. Evolution is a religion, a cult, that doesn't require church attendance, godly living, or tithing. More and more rabid evolutionists are admitting that evolution is a religion based upon faith and not facts. Evolutionist Kenneth H.S.U. Are we going to pronounce that? Hsu? Kenneth H.S.U. quoted evolutionist Paul Feyerbend approvingly when he wrote, quote, "I agree with him that Darwinism contains wicked lies. It is not a natural law formulated on the basis of factual evidence, but rather it is a dogma reflecting the dominating social philosophy of the last century," unquote. L.T. Moore of the University of Cincinnati wrote, "Our faith in the doctrine of evolution depends upon our reluctance to accept the antagonistic doctrine of special creation," unquote. Moore also confessed, quote, "The more one studies paleontology, the more certain one becomes that evolution is based on faith alone, exactly the same sort of faith which is necessary to have when one encounters the great mysteries of religion," unquote. Webster's Dictionary defines faith as an unquestioning belief, specifically in God, religion, etc. The ETC, etc. covers the religion of evolution. The definition of religion is a cause, principle, or system of beliefs held to and with ardor and faith that also describes evolution. How do you like that? So those are the admissions from many of the evolutionists themselves. Now, we want to take a look at what truth is. What is the truth? Well, mankind needs something authoritative in which he can believe, something that never changes, and something that can be defended against outrageous attacks. He has that in the immutable Word of God, and that book is not only reliable for spiritual matters, but in all other matters as well, and that includes the origin of life. Notice that God makes it very clear that he created everything as is recorded in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, and it is confirmed in Nehemiah 9, verse 6, where it says, quote, "Thou, even thou, art Lord alone. You have made heaven, the heaven of heavens, with all their host, the earth, and all things that are therein, the seas, and all that is therein, and you preservest them all, and the host of heaven worshipeth thee." God seems to be trying to make doubly sure that we understand that it was he who made the earth and everything on it, the seas and everything in them, the heavens and everything in them. God seems to be speaking in advance to those who will refuse to take him at his word. In Isaiah 45, verse 18, God said, quote, "For thus saith the Eternal that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth and made it, he hath established it. He created it not in vain. He formed it to be inhabited. I am the Eternal, and there is none else," unquote. So the Bible does teach special creation. Pompous men may try to twist and pervert it to teach otherwise, but everyone will admit that the Bible does say that in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. So why not take God at his word? After all, isn't he worthy of our trust? Well, evolutionists imply that all sane, intelligent people accept their fairy tale concerning origins, but there are hundreds of creationists with advanced degrees, over 1,000 in one professional group alone, who are very vocal witnesses to the dishonesty in their accusations. Evolutionists cannot deal with the issues involved, so they slander their opponents. Instead of attacking our positions, they attack our persons, and that is very sophomoric. Now, some of the greatest scientists of all times were creationists, men like Joseph Lister, Louis Pasteur, Isaac Newton, Johann Kepler, Robert Boyle, George Cuvier, Michael Faraday, Ambrose Fleming, Lord Kelvin, Louis Agassiz, James Simpson, William Ramsay, James Maxwell, George Mendel, Blaise Pascal, and many others were creationists. These men were among the greatest scientists who have ever lived. And Dr. Dean H. Kenyon, professor of biology at San Francisco State University, is a creationist who says that creationism is scientific and reasonable. And he said, quote, "It is my conviction that if any professional biologist will take adequate time to examine carefully the assumptions upon which the macroevolutionary doctrine rests and the observational and laboratory evidence that bears on the problem of origins, he or she will conclude that there are substantial reasons for doubting the truth of this doctrine. Moreover, I believe that a scientifically sound creationist view of origins is not only possible, but it is to be preferred over the evolutionary view, unquote. Now, obviously, all informed, educated people do not accept evolution as a fact, and all creationists are not backwoods snake handlers. So when we face off in debate with evolutionists, they usually end up looking like bungling incompetents. In fact, occasionally scientists and philosophers who are non-believers and even critics have come to the creationist position. Agnostic physicist Lipson made an amazing confession in his book. He said, quote, "I think, however, that we must go further than this and admit that the only acceptable explanation is creation. I know that this is anathema to physicists, as indeed it is to me. But we must not reject a theory that we do not like if the experimental evidence supports it." Footnote 23. What an admission from an evolutionist. Now, no one ever accused John Stuart Mill of being a Bible-thumping Christian, but listen to him give his testimony, quote, "Leaving this remarkable speculation called natural selection to whatever fate the progress of discovery may have in store for it, I think it must be allowed that in the present state of our knowledge, the adaptations in nature afford a large balance of probability in favor of creation by intelligence. It is equally certain that there is no more, nor that this is no more than a probability," unquote. Astronomer Hole seems to continue Mill's thought. He said, "Rather than accept the fantastically small probability of life having arisen through the blind forces of nature, it seemed better to suppose that the origin of life was a deliberate intellectual act. By better, I mean less likely to be wrong," unquote. Attorney W.R. Byrd suggests very astutely that it is a mistake to state categorically that the incredibly improbable cannot happen or that the more probable must happen. There is a battle going on between creationists and evolutionists, and some honest evolutionists are being converted to our position without being converted to Christ, and that is a tragedy. Scientists have their prejudices, their ego problems, and religious biases like everybody else, and they go into the creation-evolution debate with a bias against God and the Bible. Many of them never give a serious consideration to the facts as presented in this book, for instance. They're standing on sinking sand and building on a foundation that is cracking on all sides. But to their dying day, many of them must play the intellectual and then deny the book that begins, "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth." Zealous evolutionists are standing guard over their religion like eunuchs guarding a harem of graying, plump, and age-weary concubines. They have a religious devotion to evolution, the big lie, and they worship it as surely as pagans bow down to dumb, lifeless, and powerless idols. All evolutionists should have the following poem on their office wall. "As I was sitting in my chair, I knew it had no bottom there, nor legs or back, but I just sat, ignoring little things like that." Darwinian evolutionists are sitting on nothing but faith while they often disdain religion. They're followers of an apostate preacher whose speculations have been elevated to science. But they're not truth-sayers, but rather they are sooth-sayers. In reality, they are the high priests of their nihilistic religion that says in the beginning was hydrogen. But I serve the God who created the hydrogen. This is Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, Don Boyes, Ph.D., published by Freedom Publications, P.O. Box 981, Largo, Florida, 34649. Got to get that down. It may be that that address is still good. The book was published 16 years ago. Freedom Publications, P.O. Box 981, Largo, Florida, 34649, 34649. I think you might be able to find it at a Christian bookstore. That's typically where you'll find books like this. If you can't find it there, go to a used bookstore and plug in the name Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, Don Boyes, Ph.D. I haven't put it out on the internet. And see if they can find it out there on the internet for you in one of 450,000 used bookstores worldwide. You might even find it at Barnes & Noble and give it a try. Oftentimes I find books like this there. They may be old, but oftentimes there will be warehouses that have these books in them. You know, let's suppose they ran off 10,000 and they sold 8, and they got 2,000 of these books that have been sitting around for 16 years, unable to sell them. And so they're in a warehouse somewhere. Well, the bookstores, you know, these book guys, you know, they've got connections, like with these ISBN numbers. These little numbers you see up in the front, Library of Congress catalog number, well, they're plugged into those. So when the guy at Barnes & Noble plugs in, you know, this name and address or the Library of Congress catalog number, he's liable to get a hit in a warehouse in Sacramento, California, where they might have, you know, 500 of these. You never can tell. And then there's one more source that I like to tell you about. It's called BraveNewBookstore.com. Brave New Bookstore, they do the same thing. They'll look that book up someplace, and if they can find it somewhere, they'll buy a case of them and bring them in, see if they can sell them. So I tell my students and listeners, you know, here's the proof. Here's where the rubber meets the road. And this is where, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen, as old Harry used to say. And this is called Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith. And see if you can find a copy of that somewhere. And I think you'll be glad you did. I rated it about number 10, 9, or 8, or something like that in my list of evolution books. Here in my office, I've got, you know, rows and rows of books on shelves that go from floor to ceiling. And I've got a line of Book of Revelation books. I've got a line over here of all kinds of New Age Bibles. I got another line of evolution books over here. And I rated the number one evolution book. And I rated that one, The Genesis Flood by Whitcomb and Morris. But I want to rate this one. I'm going to rate it somewhere in that top 10. I've got a line of evolution books over here, and this is one of those in the top 10. Now, next time we'll come back and we'll take a look. Is the Bible reliable in every detail? Can you depend upon the Scripture? Is it true, accurate, and correct? I think it is. And so let's see whether or not it's true, accurate, and correct next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Remember this, that, and don't forget it, that these errors in scientific thought, the opinions of scientists change so rapidly that it is reported that the Library of the Louvre in Paris contains 3.5 miles of bookshelves holding volumes of science that have become obsolete in just 50 years. Obsolete in 50 years. 3.5 miles of obsolete scientific science books. All right, I'm running out of time. Let me give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, around the world, in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact discs, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.